Hello, racing fans. Edison Hatter back with another episode of First Over with Edison Hatter. This time to discuss some Saturday evening racing at Woodbine Mohawk. We march on through stakes season. This is Saturday, May the 14th, 2022. That very exciting Saturday between the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness. And I'm happy to join this week by, once again, Ray Catolo. Ray, welcome back.
Ed, you had me scared. You said march on, and then I had to look at my calendar, and then you said it was May. And I was like, I thought you just said it's March. So then I thought maybe it's April because you said we're between Saturdays, but then there's Saturdays in April. You threw, Ed, I don't know what time it is right now.
Well, it is time to discuss some Triple Crown races. We'll start with our recap.
Those are in March?
Of the Derby. We obviously had some very interesting news come out this afternoon, but just to start with last Saturday, for the record, as everyone listened to me say on the show last week, and I got to call out Mike Rabosi, who I know will listen to this, so obviously Mike knows that he has lost that bet, by the way, since Tis the Bomb did finish ahead of Charge It under the wire. But you know what, Ray? I think even you texted me Charge It was your pick, so you know what? You're both wrong. Tis the Bomb was the right pick, and you know what? I was really on the right track because the winner, of course, came out of the same races of Turfway as Tis the Bomb, with Rich Strike getting the job done at 80-1.
Yeah, try explaining that to the cashier and see if they'll give you the 160. It's my fault for going with a Pletcher horse. I can't land on the right Pletcher horse to win the Derby, on top of, you know, also taking a horse that's only had four starts. I will say, though, Ed, on my little handy-dandy program sheet of the 20 horses, I had 9 marked as contenders, and Rich Strike, I gave a question mark.
Now, I guess I'm sure many stories, good, bad, ugly, in terms of people in Derby, but I just heard an interesting one last night at Rosecroft, so I've got to share it here on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Someone kind of had the same thought I did, for the record. I didn't like any of the favorites going into this race.
I didn't like any of the horses.
So their logic was, they knew a price was going to win, and like, you know, as a gambler, I think we can debate whether or not this is a great strategy, but the logic is there. I can kind of follow this. His thought was, it's going to be a big bomb that's going to win. So let me just basically take $2 across the board on pretty much every horse in the race that's going to be above, say, 20 or 30 to 1 that I like. And I think he settled on, you know, most of the field above 20 and 30 to 1, except he did not know that the 21 drew in.
Yeah, you know, don't you hate when your premonitions lead you the wrong way? I remember one time I was picking through some pebbles in a creek, and then I grabbed this little glossy one, and all of a sudden I just had this, like, hankering from deep inside my system to go bet the New York Knicks. It's not even like the New York Knicks won, so I don't know what the hell that rock was trying to tell me. The main surprise to me in the Derby was, so that whole day everyone had been going real fast, even like the one turn miles and stuff like that. They were riding Churchill like it was a speed track, and then they were creating their own closing bias in that way. I thought that, you know, with those races aside, the jocks would be a bit more cautious going into the Derby. And lo and behold, who's setting the pace in the Derby to go 21 to the quarter and 45 to the half? It's the two jocks that didn't ride all day. And that set everything up for a horse to come from off the pace. Otherwise, Kornacki was talking about this too. You and I have talked about it off the show. How different the Derby is now from a pace formation standpoint since they've gone to the point system. I don't quote me on this, but I don't recall any other Derby since 2013 where a horse came from that far off the speed to win the race. Whether that means it can happen again, I don't know. It was as horse racing of a horse racing thing to happen. And someone made money. We don't know who.
Well, I know one of them. We'll get to that in a second. But hopefully I'm not quoted on this either, Ray, because I'm kind of semi-making up statistics. But I know I saw this.
I love making up statistics. I saw
this before the race, so I was thinking about this as well when I was deciding who to bet. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm still standing by. I picked the right horse in Tis the Bomb. But, you know, that you're looking at a race that since the point system came to being, I think the average call of the horse at first call, or the average place of the horse at first call of the winner, has been like 4. So he's basically been on the pace. And of course, before, this point system was like 9. And this year, I think 16th, 17th for Rich Strike at the first call. So, I mean, it was pretty clear to me, at least, with Summer is Tomorrow. I'm not sure if I thought it was going to be that quick, but I definitely thought it was going to set up for a closer And yeah, with that said, Ray, one winning ticket I know for sure was $5. My mom's like one of two bets she makes the entire year was on Rich Strike. So I guess that is, to be fair, the beautiful joy of this game that you and I spent hours staring at a program, or at least I did, trying to find a winner. And my mom just picked a number and threw $5 at it. And she's $400 richer and we're both poorer.
First thing I'll say is that 9 out of 10 statistics are made up. That's one of my favorite stats ever. The second thing I'll say is, genuinely, that I think that's the best part of this derby overall. I've been doing this for like 10 years, and as much as I know what I'm talking about and what I'm looking at the end of the day, I know as much as the man who has never stepped in a grandstand in his life, who was born on May 1st and just plays a 5-1 exacta that happens to come in and beat my well-calculated 4-5 shot that pays $350. It's like that person has the exact same playing ground that I do, despite having maybe never even seen a horse in his life. Maybe he goes and goes, wow, four legs? That's three more than I thought. Like, I don't that's always been the great equalizer of everything. And it's somewhat refreshing, even though I lost like $40 on the Derby, that it wasn't like it was the big favorite that won the race. It was an anomaly actually coming in, because I don't know, it's been a good while since I've had a good anomaly. My appetite has been craving for some kind of just oddity to emerge from the fog. You know what I mean? Things have been too logical as of late in this world.
Well, Ray, you know, one of my favorite channels on SiriusXM that I listen to on my many, many car rides to and from work, on the golf channel, they've got this lovely little breaking news alert siren they play when they've got breaking golf news reports. So I need my own siren for breaking news. So I guess that was it right there. anyone listening to the show probably has already seen this, but Rich Strike will be skipping the Preakness. He will go straight to the Belmont. So, it obviously would have been one of the most unforeseen Triple Crowns in history, but we officially find out a week and a half early that there will be no Triple Crown this year. And in my opinion, at least, Ray, I think given where he was in that pace battle, it makes Epicenter clearly the horse to beat in the Preakness.
First off, if Epicenter goes, perhaps. Another thing is, I don't know, like, you know how when the groundhog sees its shadow, that's when we know that the planet's going to start melting? You're familiar with that? Do you think that there's something similar where maybe like when Rich Strike was going to bite that Outrider's horse, that he was actually just seeing his shadow, and that's actually a sign that we're not going to have a Triple Crown this year? Do you think there's like an equivalent of that in our front? Because I think we should have one like that. Have a horse that just like comes out of a hole to see its shadow. I think that would be fun, wouldn't it?
All right, I'm going to sound incredibly stupid, but I'm willing to admit my stupidity. I've been busy. I've had a long week. So long story short, I've seen rumblings on the internet, but I've never actually looked that closely into investigating this. What exactly is the Outrider controversy here?
It's so controversial, because the Outrider had to tap the horse to tell him to stop it. You know, like when your kid is kind of just bouncing up and down underneath the adult table because he wants to have a sip of beer. And you have to be, you just kind of have to tap him on the head and go, no, you can't have a sip of beer. You're 4 years old. And it was just like that kind of little thing, because Rich Strike was acting up. To go back to the point that you were talking about, because I took it on a completely different angle. Everyone knows that Pimlico, how tight those turns are. You know, like they're so freaking tight. It's like a 90s kid doing a kickflip. And that everyone knows it's a bit of a speed game over there because of that. But you know, you never know what the pace setup is going to be until the day of the race. Epicenter clearly has a lot more to him than just race setup. He's one of those horses that, by the looks of it, can overcome and some type of adversity. That said, I don't know who's in the race. For all I know, I might join Rich Strike and also skip the Preakness for the Belmont. I can't say anything right now. I will be doing other things, though, on Preakness Day, that's for sure.
Well, thank you, Ray. You've given me a great segue there. You will be doing other things on Preakness Day. What will you be doing on Preakness Day?
That's right. I will be...
Hang on. More breaking news alert tone.
Oh wait, no, that's like a tornado siren. That's telling me to go into the basement.
And you will be going what, Preakness Day?
I'll be going into the basement because there's a tornado coming. That tornado is my voice to Rosecroft Raceway. I've finally found a booth that Groucho Marx said, I wouldn't want to be a part of a club that would have me as a member. I finally found a booth that would let me be a caller. That's what I want. That's what I was gonna say. Saturday, 21st May, Rosecroft Raceway. However many races are gonna be described by me, and I'm gonna describe them as such things as wow, whoo, and hi, yay. That's just a bit of a
sample. That's fantastic, Ray. We will look forward to hearing you at Rosecroft, and I'm sure you must be exceedingly grateful to whomever the fine individual was who helped get you that job.
You know, at the end of the day, they owed me big on account of a little tip they tried to give on a man named Colin Morikawa, who I don't think could tell the difference between a driver and a two-seater. So, the world levels out at the end of the day. I think the Buddhists describe that as karma. The Taoists describe it as yin and yang. I describe it as I get what I deserve. But it's way too many words than all those other ones.
Well, we will indeed look forward to seeing you on Preakness Day at Rosecroft. I will be at the Preakness, but I will make it down for the last four or five there to Rosecroft. So we will get to see you then. We will get to see you call closing night. So we will see some trainer of the meet.
I'm going to have a camera on me?
Well, we can if you want. We'll get trainer of the meet. We'll get horse of the meet. We can do a Twitter live from up in the booth with you. We can do all sorts of things. We can honor the horse of the meet. We will have all sorts of great content from Rosecroft closing night next Saturday. But Ray, we got to eventually get some Woodbine Mohawk action. But one last thing we'll discuss for the past weekend. Freehold Raceway, our two big races. We had the Lady Suffolk and the Dexter Cup. The Lady Suffolk, Okie Svanstead wins with Little Pink Lies. Russell Foster, what should I do for owner-trainer Richard Hans of Westminster, Maryland, so some local Maryland connections. They finished second, and you know, I just saw Russell down in the Rosecroft paddock last night and said that that was kind of the first time she had ever taken that turn wide, and you know, she really did. She, you know, I'm not sure if she was ever going to get to the winner anyway. Okie seemed to have quite a bit of horse left, but definitely for sure, What Should I Goo did not help her chances by taking that turn wide, but still a pretty good second place finish for the local horse, and those two were well clear of the rest of the field there, and Little Pink Lies back in at Yonkers in New York Sire Stakes action this coming Monday.
Yeah, Ock knows how to get speed out of his horses, and when you have so many turns and so little straights, speed kind of is a huge advantage. On top of that, I know Hans had a Goo Goo Gaga that did really well at like Ocean Downs and in the Maryland Sire Stakes Circuit, but for the most part, it also seems like those horses, specifically with the caliber of speed they have, do better on the bigger tracks for whatever reason. Even like 5/8, they can somewhat scrap forward. But then again, Goo Goo Gaga's main feat there was at Pocono, which people don't even say is a 5/8. Good for them. I didn't make any money on it. I bet Paymac in the Dexter Cup because the name sounded familiar to me. And then the horse didn't have the common courtesy to break an eighth before the start so I could cancel my bet. He had to break right as the wings folded. So I just watched $5 eviscerate as quickly as something that eviscerates quickly. I don't have a good comparison for it. I was going to compare it to one of your basketball bets, but those games tend to take 40 minutes.
Well, on the bright side, you weren't the only one who had a breaker in that. Wait. It's my voice at Freehold. Am I allowed to play a replay of that race on this show, or is that copyright violation? Can I replay it for my own voice while saying it again? What are my rules here?
You've talked to yourself before. You can talk to yourself again. You can react to how you're calling. Why is this an issue of just play the freaking replay if you want to?
Well, that would be, but all I was gonna say was I'm paraphrasing here, so copyright people, this is being recreated on the spot here. But for sure, I think it was they're off to the Dexter Cup final. Paymac on a break right at the start. Around the turn to the back stretch. And that's Pretender, the sixth.
Yeah. Come on. Cut to the chase, Ed. We watched the race.
Grizzly Bear has broken as well.
Yeah.
And there goes T-Rex. T-Rex Blue Chip has also made a break, and someone else broke as well, right?
There were 8 horses in the race. I think 5 of them broke.
Correct. Yeah, the 3 that stayed flat were Justice. Well, in correct order, Brave by Design, Justice, and Pour Me a Double. And Brave by Design ends up winning for Team Bongiorno. Joe Bongiorno, Brave by Design, wins the 2022 Dexter Cup Final.
Yeah, I don't know if that's their first. I'm going to call it a classic win because it's one of those trotting 3-year-old races on the Hambletonian Trail. That might be the first one for the Bongiornos. Don't quote me on that, but their barn's been developing over the last couple of years. And, you know, now they have more younger horses. They're probably going to be a bit more prominent in that regard. And at the very least, it's in my mind, it's always nice when you see new names come up, because as great as the big guys are in this sport, it's always a bit more interesting when there's a bit more variety. You know, I don't eat broccoli every night for dinner. Sometimes I like to put some sweet potatoes in the oven. Sometimes I like to whip together a stew and put some like celery and carrots inside of it. Sometimes, Ed, I don't eat at all because I forget.
I've done that plenty as well myself, but yeah, so it was Brave by Design. Joe was talking pretty highly of the horse when I was in the back paddock with him on Saturday night or Friday night at the Meadowlands before that race. So definitely congratulations to them. And the favorite, though, at 1-5, which, by the way, I mean, I think I mentioned to you beforehand that I kind of liked Pretender a little bit in that race. But
so it was your fault that the horse broke.
See, what I was trying to say was I thought you would get a better price, though. I didn't think 1-5 would end up being your post-time price there on Pretender. So definitely quite a short price if you did take him. And, yeah, your chances were gone pretty quick there going to the backstretch. But Pretender is back in on Saturday night at the Meadowlands, race 5. Or, I'm sorry, not Saturday night, Friday night. Friday night, race 5 from post 1. And spoiler alert, that is my price play on the Meadowlands broadcast tomorrow night. So,
a whopping 7-2. Oh, get the wheelbarrows ready.
Now, hang on. Come on, Ray. Look at that race and tell me what the post time price is going to be. Be a superhero is in that race.
I have not seen. Oh, that's a win, Missy B. Okay, I don't remember this horse at all. I just saw Testing's in here, and that's the horse that drew my eye. Testing was good on this track last year. I'm not even looking at a program. I'm just calling it right now. Testing is the actual value play of that race. He's going to be a much better price than freaking Pretender. It's in the name, Ed. He's going to pretend to be some kind of good value for your wallet. Testing's right there, man. Come on.
I'm just still disappointed. I was already with it's Pretender through the stretch on top by 5, by 6. Pretender, there's no faking the credentials here. He's a Dexter. Come on. I had a chance.
Cool. You know what I'm not going to do when I go to Rosecroft? I'm not going to prepare the races. I'm going to take them as they deal them.
That'd be great if you just had like a pre-written down, like, here's what I'm going to call in this race. And like, you know, it's the 2 on front. You're saying, oh, but look, it's the 6 pulling away with each and every stride. It's like 3 of them across the wire.
And the judges are going to call me on the phone and say, look, I had this script already. Did you listen to the... I had iambic pentameter and everything. It had such a unique flow. Like, sure, the horse that I called first finished last, but the phonetics of it were simply divine. Like, you can't blame me for doing such a good job.
All right, Ray. Well, we will move our attention now to some Wood by Mohawk action, Saturday night action, 12 races on the program, getting into some longer cards, some better cards as we get all of these great stakes horses back in action. We got 2 opens to talk about. We've got some SPOA eliminations to discuss, and we'll discuss one of them right here in race 1 as we kick off the 20-cent pick 5.
Will we discuss
5.
It?
It's the 3-year-old Philly Trot SPOA elimination, 3-year-old Philly Trotters. And come on, Ray, the first time you were ever on my show last October, I was sitting in the Delaware Park parking lot, and you told me you were going to commit a cardinal sin that you'll never do again in your life by singling a young Philly Trotter. And actually, ironically, if I remember correctly, I think it was a Darren Castle. And here you are again, singling her.
Did she win when I did that?
She did.
Oh, okay. Then, God, I'm such a sinful little naughty boy. I'm gonna have to I'm going to have to go to confession fact, after this podcast.
In fact, we're staring at it. Actually, it's still in the program. It was that October 4th race. I'm very confident. That sixth race, October 4th.
Oh,
very confident.
God. That might be five Hail Marys for me. I can't see anything beyond her. She's coming back as a three-year-old. She's progressed from her two-year-old season by the looks of it. Of course, we'll never know until she actually steps onto the track. The only other horse I marked as somewhat interesting is the two Make It Easy. Because this horse in the spring series last week went 26-3 to the course. This is a muscle mass filly that had enough speed to take the top and do so to a 26-3 first quarter. Of course, ended up kind of faltering, breaking stride, tired, whatever. Now making her second start for Dave Maneri. I'm just pointing Make It Easy. This horse is 10-1 on the morning line. Even if not for exotic purposes, keep an eye on that horse. That is some kind of ability you don't see often. And the other advantage to Adair Castle, of course, is that she sticks kind of more closer to the pace than the other main contender in this race, Mischievous Rose to the Inside, who's 9-5 on the morning line. She has to deal with the inside draw while already not having a lot of speed and a precarious gait to begin with. So even though she came home in 27 seconds last time in her first start of the season, she has all of those to contend with. And at the end of the day, if you're more forward than another horse and you both can come home as fast, I'm no freaking physicist, but I can figure out how momentum works. Adair Castle probably has the advantage there.
Yeah, there's not much for me to add in this first race other than if Adair Castle loses, we will both very quickly be turning around to play the pick threes and pick fours later on the card, because we will both single her and put all of the chips in the table on her to start the night at 6-5 on the morning line. And yeah, I gotta suspect she's pretty heavily odds on by post time, but you never do know, you know, first start for 3-year-old, 2 to 3-year-old transition, blah, 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 blah. But I think she pretty much towers over this field.
And
now race two.
Yeah.
We have 5-year-old Junkers, now winners of three races or 33,500 lifetime, Pacers for a purse of 19,000. We both go three deep here, going a little different directions, though.
Sure. I don't know what direction you're going. I'm trying to go in the correct direction. Of course, even though I'm using Acapulco Sunburn, who is five, it's going to be a massive favorite on the morning line. And I'm taking two others in here. This horse is supposed to win this race, I feel like. Of course, he has other propositions down the road, certainly being a Millar Farms horse and the Nicolucci bar and all that fun stuff. But now he's adding Lasix. The only other thing is he's coming off of 2 weeks rest, which, of course, that might not necessarily be a bad thing since he finished second in his most recent start. But there's some questions I have, of course, for this horse who still is developing, but he's getting better and better with each start. All of that to say he's 5-2 on the morning line. There's not much else I really need to say as a freaking expert. Many Moons I also use because in the event Acapulco is somewhat short, Many Moons is most likely going to be the next closest threat. Followed suit with a 54-4 back half to finish second in his first start of the season. This is an okay little horse on the Grand Circuit and the Stakes Circuit here at Mohawk last year. Seems like he's also gotten better as a three-year-old. And then I throw on a four-year-old in this race, the three, Control Me Once. This horse has speed. This horse has ability. I don't know what they're going to do with him. I don't know if they're going to try and take him back and try and close into the mix, but this horse has the ability to be put into contention and as much of an ability to try and sit a stalking trip and pop home the win. It's just a matter of, this is the second start of the season. You don't know what the game plan is, but horse came home in like 54 seconds last time. Has a good draw, is a great price on the morning line. It doesn't make sense for me to try and leave this horse off the ticket for as cheap as my ticket is to begin with. So I'm going 2-3-9 in the second leg.
I will use the 9, Acapulco Sunburn, who probably post-time favorite here, definitely. Comes off a pretty good second place finish last time out here against similar company. Do not use either of your other two. I use two others, Ray. I'll give you a pat on the back if you can tell me what those two are.
Crap, I didn't hear what you said, so I'm going to say Tommy Gordon and the San Antonio Spurs.
I will use the 5, Dr. Joe, and the 7. Damn! And the 7, Lux Sealster. The 5, Dr. Joe, ended up parked out to that opening quarter. They got that in 55-2, a bit of a quick too close to too quick of a pace for him. And that was the first start for the Carmen Asiello Barn. This will be second start for the new connections. We'll look to rebound here with a little bit of a better effort. And then the 7 Lux Steel. So this is your big 15-1 price on the morning line. A victory last time out at a decently large number against 9 winners of 2 company. I thought this one had been racing pretty well against that 9 winners of 2 company. This is a step up in class, but, you know, he was 0-8 last year as a 3-year-old. He seems to have finally figured it out this year. He's now got 2 wins, including 1 last time out. So maybe he's kind of putting it together. I'll throw him in at a huge number. And see, I'm just of the opinion that I want to try to get a price with one of those two. And if it's not, then I think it's the favorite. So I think it's Acapulco Sunburn, if not. So 5, 7, 9 for me, race 2. I just dislike even numbers too, so odd numbers only.
If we were being a bit more conscientious in our ticket construction, we would probably play 2 different tickets. One singling Acapulco Sunburn, one spreading, just for efficiency sake. Maybe the one that you single Acapulco Sunburn, you try and play for a higher minimum. But I can't, we can't do that because I have to present a single ticket for ease of access. Let's move on to the third leg.
You know, I don't think you have to. I might audition on my show is definitely in the past given out like ABC kind of tickets.
Okay. Next time on, I'm going to give out 10 pick 5 tickets. I'm going to come back on the week after or the next time after that and go, Ed, I gave out the winner on your show. And then you're going to say you gave out 10 tickets. I said, but one of them won.
Huh. Now, Ray, remember I just said odd numbers only?
Yeah.
I didn't even actually realize it. My next race, I go 2, 4, 6, so there's that.
Well, you're also looking at the third. Oh, it is the third race, so you... I don't know how you're going to deal with the fourth race if this is your rule. Oh, you dealt with the third second.
Third race, the SBOA elimination, the 3-year-old Philly Trot for purse 25,000. And this is definitely would appear the tougher of the two divisions, at least... Well, tougher from a handicapping perspective, probably softer in terms of the competition if you have a horse in here you'll be facing. But with that in mind, you'll use 2 in here.
I mean, you're like odd numbers, so you are betting a pick 5. So I'm 4-6. I don't use the 2. I understand the 2. She has an okay qualifier coming in. She might go gate to wire. These 3-year-old races, especially when some of them haven't raced a lot this year, you don't know what they're going to do, where they're going to go, who's going to stay flat, who's going to start kind of throwing their head and getting all upset and fussy. You don't know. There's so much you don't know. And I had to predict it beforehand. Making Magic Tonight has a lot of starts. This horse raced 9 times this season already. Has 2 wins in the winter. Raced okay in the spring series. Doesn't really have a whole lot in terms of a late kick, but it seems like this field altogether is fairly even in form and also just in their ability to go fast. So Making Magic Tonight might be in an okay spot to capitalize off of some kind of stalking trip. That's how I imagine her. She's probably going to be somewhat close anyway, I feel, at the very least, from that post especially. Aside from that, resolving, this horse can leave. She can come from off the speed. I don't know what, again, like I would single her if I knew she was going to go to the front because she has more. She has more stamina to her than the others by the looks of it, at least in terms of going however fast you got to go to win this race. But she's making her first start off of 2 qualifiers. Her second qualifier is way better than the first one from this year. But again, most of her racing, she's been so far off the pace, and that's been to her disadvantage. But she's also competed against much better horses like Venerable, Delilah Hanover, blah, 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 blah. I don't single resolving because you just don't know what's going to happen. So I'm going 4-6. Can I stop? Can I shut up, Ed? Can I stop talking about this?
No, it's okay, Ray. You usually take twice as long as my other guests, but then I can just say, but you normally say the same things I was going to say, so I can just say 3 words and we're good to go. So you already made the case for my 2, even though you didn't use her, and 2, 4, 6 for me, and that's that. Maybe long stock.
Thank God. Don't ask me about that race again.
And resolving. So with that, Ray, we will turn our attention to race 3. That's the SBO elimination, 3-year-old Philly Trot.
Don't tell me about this race again, Ed. You can't make me talk about it again. You can't put me through that.
Well, I'm not sure about you, but I almost would rather talk about race 3 again than race 4. Race 4 is 5-year-olds younger. That one is 6 races or 83,000 lifetime. I thought this was an incredibly difficult race, but you've got it narrowed down to 3.
I don't have it. Don't make it sound like I have some kind of scientific process to this. Ed, I'm guessing. This is a race where someone without discipline would see 10 horses and go, I'm going to use the 1, the 2, the 3, the 4, the 5, the 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And then they would say, so you want to use all of them? And then they would go, I mean, I guess if that's all of them. I don't know who the favorite's supposed to be. You have a horse like Salzburg Victor who can go 25 seconds in the final quarter but be in freaking New Brunswick and having to come back home into Campbellville and somehow try and win the race. It's like, what good is breaking the sound barrier if you're in a vacuum? You know what I'm saying, Ed? That's you and I, you know what I'm saying. You're a space guy. Salzburg Victor has a ton of ability, but so many question marks. Texas Mickey can sit close to the pace, but is so trip dependent that my brain cannot run the algorithm necessary to figure out how many races out of 100 he wins. Somewhere in Verona, he has to stalk the pace. He doesn't really have much beyond that, and I don't know if he's going to. Knock 10 is another trip dependent. My point being is that this race is going to come down to what these guys do off the gate. And I don't know if you noticed that. I hate playing these mind games. I hate trying to figure out. I hate trying to play psychology on, well, if Jonathan Drury woke up, maybe he's a bit cranky when he gets out of bed. So he's going to want to fire off that gate. He doesn't want to see anyone in front of him. Like, I can't. When I have to start handicapping like that, I start going insane. All of this said, rounding the argument into place, here are the three horses I think have some semblance of form. South Beach Hanover can get off the car. South Beach Hanover can sit close to the pace. South Beach Hanover can have something left in the tank if he sits close to the pace. But also, he's a horse that, by the looks of it, might get locked at the pylons and hope for something to open for him. I don't know which of these is going to happen. He's at the very least raced well at this class before. He's just gotten into a lot of troubled trips and stuff. He just needs things to go his way, and he can certainly win here. Peter Poole, I think is going to be an underlay, but he's still 10-1 on the morning line, so I have hope setting the pick five. He's value. He came home in 25-3 in his first start for Cassandra LaCourte. I don't necessarily think he's going to be able to go that kind of trip again, but it's another kind of mile where from this kind of post, he should be able to work out some kind of stalking trip and be one that can progress in the final stages of the race and be close enough to do so in a way that matters, unlike Salzburg Victor, who's off my ticket. Merido Hanover's sneaky. Merido Hanover's moving up in class. He came home in like 54 seconds in that last race and can also get off the wings. Now, whatever he's going to do off the car, that's going to determine how good he performs and how well he finishes, because he certainly is another one that, if put in the right place, can get the job done. And he's also value at 10-1 on the morning line. But Ed, I've been saying it. I don't know where these horses are going to. The only thing I know is that these horses are going to be on the track and they're going to finish somewhere. And even that I'm questionable of.
All right. I'll ask the more specific question this time,
okay,
Ray.
Okay, please do.
Three horses for me.
Yeah.
Three South Beach Hanover is one of them.
Uh-huh.
Not using your other two. What two horses do I use here?
Oh, God. My hand is shaking having to think about the rest of this field. You use the one?
Wrong.
Okay, thank God. You don't use Salzburg Victor.
Wrong.
You use what? What? I'm trying to do the R2-D2 thing.
And the third one?
The third one is going to be the 9?
Nope.
Not the 10.
We both use Acapulco Sunbird, so logically.
Wait, so logically, what? So logically, oh, what, the 6?
Come on, you beat him 2 races ago.
Oh, I was even paying attention to that. Oh, I don't care about that. Acapulco Sunbird is, that's a, you're talking about season in F field. You know what I'm saying?
So I go 3-5-8 here, the 3 South Beach Hanover, like you, many of the same reasons there. The 5, Salzburg Victor was, it's had some tough posters to work from lately. Did pull him at 25-4. How did you phrase though? Where he comes from?
He's like in the dairy section of the supermarket looking for a tomato.
You know, 7 seconds this year, so really the classic second-itis, but...
he could come home in seven seconds from where he's coming from it. I don't know if it's going to do him any good.
How will you Salzburg, Victor? And the 8-9-10, who moves up here a bit in class, but was a pretty good win, too, back against Acapulco Sunburn, who likely takes some pretty significant action in that second race, I believe it is, tonight, so... That second race, yeah, for the non-winners of three, so this is non-winners of six. A little bit tougher company there, but Knock 10 did graduate nicely with that score over Acapulco Sunburn. Did pretty well for the front end as well, so maybe this one's pretty close to the pace early on. So 3-5-8 for me. Race four, as we will flip to race five, the payoff leg of the early pick five. Non-winners of 8,000 in their last five starts. Pacers for a purse of 18,000, and you will close it out by going three deep.
Oh, I feel such a weight lifted off my chest now. I don't have to look at that race anymore. The outside two are the obvious ones to me in this race. First off, Flying Even Better returns to a class that this horse just missed in two starts ago, and even just missed in four starts ago. Every time this horse bounces up into the numbers of 11,000, he always goes some kind of even effort. But then this is the class he belongs in. He just, for some reason, can't figure out how to be the first one to the finish line. It's a tough concept, I know. But... maybe things turn around here. The horse is going to be up close at the very least. He has a horse to his outside that is also probably going to show some kind of speed. He can come home pretty well. Maybe tonight, or not tonight, tomorrow. I don't know when you're listening to this. Maybe he can figure out that you're allowed to put your neck in front. And in fact, that it's okay. And if he doesn't, Century Hannibal makes a lot of sense, though, too, because he's going to be going towards the front. And if he doesn't go 54 and 3 to the half and maybe rates the mile, perhaps he could probably go wire to wire. Who knows? Beyond those two of the 9 and the 10. Idle Perception went a big mile last time in that conditioned race, which, by the way, I don't know if anyone else reading this program knows this. Every race is a condition. So I don't know what it's supposed to mean when it says a condition. Is it we're looking at the condition? Well, this horse in the condition had advanced into a 27 3/3 quarter, doing so, going 26-4 around that final turn. Reasonably then, did not have a lot in the tank in the stretch, but had enough to hang in there and finish fourth in that 10-horse field. That was a big race to go, second start off the bench. Now making his third start off the bench, so long as he's not the one going first over, I think he can advance from that condition into the regular condition, which by virtue of being one less condition head, this horse is dropping in class. 6-9-10. How can you not take a drop in class?
If I recall correctly, I don't know if you seriously don't know or whatever, but I think if the ones that just say condition is that like non-starters for a purse, starting for a purse of 12,000 or less in the last four, something like that.
Wow, why can't it just say that? You put it so clearly.
I don't know, to be honest with you. I'm not sure. I guess what would be the five-word abbreviation for that? I guess, yeah, see, that'd be tough. I don't know what you put in there for that.
You have a greater than sign and a less than sign. You do the less than sign, you do PRS, and then you just do the number. Is that less simple?
P, 12, less than 12,000, last four.
No, you can't just do single P. A single P can mean so many things, and lots of things I can't talk about here. But if you do PRS, what's it going to mean? Prus? You mean pros? Oh, yeah, these horses, they're such linguists. Their hooves just speak to everybody. It's going to mean purse. That's the only thing it can mean. I see pref, and I don't go, God, these are some professors of horses. I know it's a preferred.
All right, well, we get to play this game one more time here, Ray. You go 6-9-10. I will use the 9 and the 10. I will not use the 6. So instead, I will use...
Oh, God. I hope you don't use the 7.
Nope.
Don't use the 1.
Nope.
Good. Don't use nickel bag. Off the 6 scratch? Off the 6 scratch?
Always concerned to use horses off of the 6 scratch, but Nickelbag was a very nice second place effort. First
12.
Over this level.
Back he hasn't raced in a month.
And even money, he's had a very nice little vacation.
He hasn't won in 4 months.
He's ready to come back off a nice little vacation. and get the job done on Saturday night here.
Is he?
Or not? He is.
You're going to take Nickelback, first start off a six scratch, having not raced in 4 weeks as a 12-year-old off of a 6-1 on the morning line. You're going to take that.
I was a little concerned at first, too, but I called up Nickelback this morning, and he told me that he was feeling okay.
And oh, God, Ed, there are so many things I want to say right now that I can't by law. So I'm going to take the fifth.
He's raced against commanding officer. He's raced against line drive Hanover. There's a lot of really solid class in there. We've got Under the Southern Sun in the recent form lines. And again, a pretty solid second place effort to Highland Beach Lover. So really, every single horse has won in the races he's been in recently have all been pretty solid.
Ed,
so
do you know why I'm going to take the fifth?
Because come on, you're out here using 4 year olds against 3 year olds.
I don't use Nickelback. I'm going to take the fifth because I'm going to have a horse that wins the race. Nickelback is not going to win this race. He might win further down the road. He is a good little war horse, but not this one. Not this one.
Oh, one horse to win on Saturday night. Please let it be Nickelback.
It's not going
to
be Nickelback. It's not going to be Nickelback by a mile.
All right, what was your top pick in here, Ray?
Of the fifth race?
Yeah.
I have to pick a top one? I thought I just had to give you horses. I have to rank them now?
I feel like we need this, like, come on, I already won a match bet against Mike Rabosian that last week. I feel like we need a match race here. Who crossed the line first, Nickelback or?
Nickelback, the nine.
Okay, Nickelback versus Flying Even Better N.
Yeah, no, Flying Even Better is going to beat Nickelback easily.
There we go. Keep that in mind, racing fans. You're watching Saturday night. We'll create a line. We'll take bets on this. Nickelback versus Flying Even Better N, and I would hammer Nickelback if I were you. I put at least a nickel on it.
Oh, God. Oh, I think I'm going to have a coronary by the end of this episode. Jesus Christ.
Race pick five tickets for Ray Cotolo, a 5 with 2-3-9, with 4-6, with 3-4-7, with 6-9-10, $10.80.
Yep.
And for me, a 5 with 5-7-9, with 2-4-6, with 3-5-8, with 2-9-10. But you could just single Nick Bag in the last if you want to save money. But as it stands, that's a $16.20 play. All right, we got some opens to talk about. Race number 8 is the Filly and Mare preferred handicap. By the way, Ray, I think you were on the last time this happened too. So what's the difference between a Filly and Mare preferred handicap period and a Phillies and Mares preferred period handicap period?
You know, these are Phillies and Mares, and you're talking periods. As a man, I don't think I can chip in on this. I don't think I should. I don't think it's my place.
Field of 8 here, and well, maybe it gets a little more interesting this week. We did see Awesome Hill turn the tables on So Much More last week, who was defeated. Does So Much More rebound this week and continue our dominance in these preferred handicaps with Phillies and Mares, or does Awesome Hill win again this week, Ray, or do we go somewhere totally different?
You never know why a horse doesn't win a race. You don't know it as much as you don't know why a horse wins the race. Even when I can give out a 50-1 shot that crosses the line first, and I could give you all the reasons why that horse won the race, Ed, I don't know why he actually won the race. I'm just conjecturing things that I've seen as patterns and just assigning them as truth. In So Much More's case, I don't know why all of a sudden that was the week that she just missed by a neck. She's been missing a couple here and there. She was fifth against Nowhere's at 20,000. You can go, well, she felt Chris Christopheru was driving her, and she said, "You're not my driver," and she got real mad. Like you could make up something like that. But why did
she was against the boys, and she was taking on the boys?
Okay, sure, but then Summer's the 20,000. They aren't the Filly and Mares. You know what I mean? Like, aside from all of that, she's back in the with the girls. Whatever. Awesome Hill most likely is going to try and go to the front again. That's how this race is probably going to play out. I don't think anyone else in this race can really match her speed off the gate. Better Be Donna might have been able to had she not drawn the inside. But all of this to say, this is another race where you're most likely going, this race probably going to materialize the exact same way that last one did, where you're going to see so much more having to grind into it and Awesome Hill trying to do it the easy way. So much more is going to be a shorter price than Awesome Hill. So much more, as far as we know, is a better horse than Awesome Hill. But
can we get a pick out of you and all that?
And I don't want to pick anyone in this race. The only thing I've truly noted is the Barn Dogs Watching has to break through at this class at some point. She's going to be stalking Awesome Hill at the very least, and she's going to be an okay price. If she can get by both of them, I don't know.
Should we call the police on that? That doesn't sound good.
What, that she's going to be stalked? No, don't call the police. Not when the Barn Dog's watching. Got the Barn Dog watching. You don't need some kind of cop to come in and go wee woo wee wee woo. That's not going to do anything. That's just going to get someone killed. You don't want that. I want to try and cash something. I don't know if I could cash if I bet that the Barn Dog's watching in this spot, but she's good. She's an okay mare. She's a 4-year-old. Maybe I'm catching the lightning bolt before it strikes. I don't know. Ben Franklin tried to do the same thing, and he spent the rest of the Constitutional Convention drunk out of his mind. So I don't know what this means for me in this case, but you got two obvious horses to the outside. Awesome Hill's probably going to be a better price and so much more. I think Rob Reed says it all the time. Take the better price of the two if you really want to make money off of it. But I mean, truly, if it's down to those two, I don't see how I could bet the race. Unless the Barn Dog Who's Watching is like 10-1. I don't know if she's going to be. I don't think she is. If she's 10-1, I might think about putting $2 on her for sake of. She's a good mare. She's a good mare.
Yeah, I say this more from my picking a winner perspective more than a gambling odds perspective, but I see it as 8-7. I can't get around that. I think so
and
much
that
more
is where we're different, Ed.
And Awesome Hill wins it. That's probably a like $4 exacta, so I'm not implying by any stretch to play it, but if we're just trying to pick a winner, I think so much more wins. I think Awesome Hill's second. If you're trying to go against a horse that's a shorter price on the morning line, I don't really like Kick Up Your Heels, and if I'm being honest. So I guess maybe the Barn Dog's Watching the winning thread there. Honestly, I think the Barn Dog's Watching takes more money than Kick Up Your Heels in. Is that fair to say?
The only reason why I had Kick Up Your Heels marked as interesting is because you don't know what Better Be Donna is going to do. If there is some kind of pressure to the pace, of course, that benefits so much more. But that's also to the detriment of Awesome Hill. Same time, any pace also benefits Kick Up Your Heels, who can kick home fairly strong. So all that to say, like there's a reason why Kick Up Your Heels will probably take more money than the Barn Dog's Watching. But again, like, I don't know. The morning line's also tough to read at this track anyway. The Barn Dog's Watching could be the third choice at the end of the day and go off 6-1, or maybe in 4-1 or something like that, and not be a bet at all. All I have to say at this point is if you've always been about picking winners, you got to rethink that nickel bag thing. As whoa.
Oh gosh, I wish I had a crystal ball. If I could see one thing right now, it's who wins that fifth race. Because if it's Nickelbag, I just want to like fully let the trash talking begin right now. And if I'm wrong, I just want to delete
God,
this and it never happened.
If you're going for Nickelbag, you're gonna have a crystal something. I can tell you that much.
I am standing by it. We will flip to race 10. That is the prefer or free for all pace.
Jimmy Freight's losing. He's gonna lose.
I promised everyone listening last week, I promised this will be the last week I go against him if he wins. So I will take Jimmy Freight on top this week. I've knocked him out of the winner's circle, but I've gone against him in every single one of his last four starts. He's won every single one. No. Jimmy Freight on top. Underneath, I will go the interesting direction, though. American History. I will go 1-3.
Okay, can I ask you why?
Why what?
Why do you think that's going to happen?
Well, Jimmy Freight has been crushing this preferred group.
On the lead.
This is a very interesting free-for-all this week because we get a lot of new faces to this group, to be fair. But Jimmy Frade is now 8 for 14 this year. He has been taking care of them pretty well from the front end. You know, he's done them just off the pace, too. You know, from the rail, he's going to get away pretty well no matter what. And American History was one that I've liked those last two starts at the Meadowlands. Two back, really seemed like he needed that one coming in from Yonkers. Never really got involved in that race. And then, you know, led the way most of the way in that Charlie May race. And obviously, Charlie May proved much the best late in that race. But I didn't think he raced badly, finishing at 149 there and 27-1. Chips north of the border. So I will take American History for second. But to preview the rest of the field before I throw it to you, I guess, Ray, I mean, you got Fun at the Beach, who's also coming from that open at the Meadowlands, finished 5th back on May the 7th. A Tattoo Artist comes in from that Borgata Pacing Series final, finished 4th there, where Fun at the Beach won that Pacing Series final. Revolt comes off of a conditioned victory against non-winners of 22,000, comes out of that So Much More race, actually, last time out. And Under the Southern Sun finished 2nd at a big number in the free-for-all last week off the pocket trip to Jimmy Frate. So a good field of 6. What are your thoughts then, Ray?
Not Jimmy Frate, that's for one. For 2, I don't know if American History at this point, his main game is just go to the lead and then hope nobody catches him. I don't see how he can do that. I don't see how he could do that here. And honestly, that's kind of Tattoo Artist's MO, but God, Tattoo Artist is so much better on a bigger track than he is on a smaller track. Those races at Yonkers are phenomenal. And now he's coming back into Doc Moore's barn off of that Borgata series, which toss the final completely. That's not a reflection of what this horse is capable of doing. He's coming back into Doc Moore's barn after being Chris Ryder's down in the States for however long this horse has been down there. This horse going back to 2 turns is the most dangerous thing about him. And in terms of stakes caliber horses, Tattoo Artist always has had a bit more class and ability, at least to me and in my mind, than Jimmy Frate. Jimmy Frate still has a lot to prove to me in that regard. This horse, remember, before he went to stud, he won the Mohawk Gold Cup, but beyond that, kind of struggled to break into the aged stakes ranks and stuff like that. He's older now. He could be better now. I don't know. He hasn't proven much anything beyond the streak that he's been running up here in his comeback trail. But Tattoo Artist has established himself as not only speedy, but gutsy, gritty. He's able to compete with much better horses than these. He's probably going to be the second choice in the betting. And if he is, it might be value. If he's the favorite, it might still be value, but it all depends on how heavy of a favorite he is. I don't think he's going to be when he's up against Jimmy Frey, who has the home field advantage. Hopefully Fun at the Beach takes a lot of money, because the only way I see this horse getting involved is if it materializes in the most textbook way possible, where you see Jimmy Frate likes to leave, American History likes to leave, and Tattoo Artist likes to leave, and then the elementary mind goes...
So basically, he needs Borgata Pay Series final setup with 53 and 4 half again.
Yeah, like he needs them to go real stupid, which for two horses shipping to a different country off of however many weeks off, I don't see that happening. This race is probably going to form fairly logically and not in the way to benefit Fun at the Beach. And then beyond that, the other two horses in this race, Revolt and Under the Southern Sun, I think that they're top condition horses. They aren't the free for all types that Jimmy Frate, American History, and Tattoo Artist are. They're in a different echelon, and are at a disadvantage with those outside posts. So Tattoo Artist he's a good little horse. Tattoo Artist. How can you take Jimmy Frey? Jimmy Frey's gonna be so, like, how can you, come on, Ed, that's not a good bet. You would rather go down blazing than succumb to a dull flame.
I made the promise after I tried to beat him 4 weeks in a row that I will not do it this week, so I will not do it this week. Which is why he will not win.
You know, you're on to something, but your logic is, for lack of a better term, flawless.
Well, Ray, that'll cover our discussion of the Win by Mohawk card, but one last thing before we wrap it up. Breaking news in the town.
Oh.
Like danger, danger! Seek shelter now!
Like how the sound keeps changing every time. So, Ray, you are aware of the Scioto Downs new wager this year, right?
What? New wager? They make a
let's applaud my dear friend Gabe Pruitt for a fantastic idea. A $1 pick 8 with a $25,000 guaranteed payout to anyone who has 8 of 8. Not a jackpot type thing. If you have 8 of 8 and there's 5 winning tickets, it'll get split 5 ways. $25,000, the track will cover whatever difference there is. Very difficult to hit, obviously. A dollar-based wager. So you got to figure it's not going to happen very often. The jackpot, or no, I'm sorry, the jackpot, but the carryover pool will be built up very nicely. Payouts, a little bit of consolation every day. Here we are. Day number one of the Scioto Pick 8. There was $2,189 bet into that pick 8. There have been 7 consecutive favorites to win. And there are 5 tickets alive to the 4. And there's 1 ticket out to the 7. So if the 4 or the 7 wins, well, that's a bit of a payout on the guarantee. Congratulations to the winners. And yeah.
So prayers for Gabe Pruitt. He's going through a tough time right now. I'm not much of a praying guy myself. I'm not much of a good vibe guy either. I don't know what a vibe even is. I'm used to playing a marimba or a xylophone personally. But yeah, I mean, this is, you think Georgia State Patrol will, you know, go beyond their duties of traffic and just arraign him right then and there for whatever happens after the next race?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. You know what, Ray? We've already been here 56 minutes. I'm staring at the simulcast feed. They're on the track and going towards the gate, so...
Does anyone have Gabe's number? We need to do a welfare check when this race is done.
Anyone who doesn't want to listen to this, this show is basically over. You are more than welcome to turn it off now, but if you didn't see it in live time and you want to listen to it now in replay, you can watch Ray and I react to this, because they're going to the gate, Ray. Oh. I'm sure you've got this feed, too. So what was it? So 5 tickets to the 4... 1 to the 7.
Oh, crap.
So
I opened Hoosier.
Would pay $5,000 each, and the 7 would pay the full $25,000 guarantee. And, yeah, the 4 is 3 to 2. The 7 is 5 to 1.
It gets split. I thought, okay. I thought if 5 people hit it, the track would have to pay out $125,000.
No. But still, that's looking at like a 20-ish.
Oh, Gabe will be fine. Gabe's going to live another day.
I still think it's a very interesting wager idea, and I do applaud Gabe and Scioto for trying it out, but I might not be around long if it's... Because if there's 4 wins, think about it, that also means there's 8 favorites to win this sequence, and actually, they're off here, Ray, and I'm going to trust you to give updates on that race for a minute while I go look at this. So let's see it. So the first leg was a 3-5 favorite. Second leg was even money. Even money for the third leg. The fourth leg was 1-5. Followed by 6-5, followed by 3-5, followed by even money, and here we go to this last leg, and it's 3-5 on the 4 here who has taken over.
Yeah.
Now, where's our 7? The 7 is settled in, it looks like, about 7th, right?
Yeah, Chris Page is on the 7, and that horse is relegated towards the back of the field by the looks of it.
Now, past the opening quarter, you got a big long shot here at like 70-1. It looks like that's going to get the park out job from the 3-5 favorite. So, Josh Sutton, the 3-5 favorite.
7 is, in fact, last. Second to last.
Oh, 7 is last. Okay, so basically it's probably the 4. Second to last, looks like. So, the 4 is basically the... One to dodge here or root for? I'm not even sure. If we're being honest, Ray, are we rooting for this payout or not?
I have no idea what I'm even watching right now. This is opening day at Scioto Downs, and every race has been won by a favorite. How do they know which horses are going to be that good on this track first time? Roxette, this horse is turning everything away. Southern Panda is moving 3 wide with Jeremy Smith. That horse looks like the closest threat, if not Brett Miller in the pocket right now, because that passing lane's about to open. But Roxette has extended on a length lead.
If this is going to cost Scioto money, we may as well at least give them free promo. So yeah, 3:15 every day. No lights this year, so we'll be afternoon racing at Scioto Downs. And yeah, 3:15 first post time all through the summer. Definitely some good racing out there. Free programs every day as well. As they come to the top of the stretcher, we got a battle on. It's 4-3, and you know what? It's maybe the 3 at 14-1.
Nope, it's not. No, Josh Sutton's getting more out of Roxette.
just setting this on more at the inside. The four goes on to victory. And I'm sorry, we still just got to wait. I just want to see the actual prices on the board. I just want to see.
So here's the thing.
Phone's about to die. I got to pull up the iPad. I want to see this.
All right. So every race has been won by a favorite. So Magic Knight was the morning line favorite. That was the winner of leg seven. Gratified was the morning line favorite in leg six. Forceful Power was not the morning line favorite. Forceful Power was the morning line second choice in leg five. Leg four was won by the morning line favorite. Leg three was won by the morning line favorite. Leg two was won by the morning line favorite. And then leg one was won. So seven morning line favorites, one morning line second choice in that pick eight. Big day for the people who bet that angle.
Which, honestly, you know me, Ray. You know I very unashamedly call myself a very heavy chalk player, so I'm almost disappointed I didn't get a piece of this action.
Ed, every time I talk to you, my mouth is the driest it's ever been. Take that as you will.
I mean, I could have had... Well, I guess it would have been split six ways, and gosh, that could have been a nice little $4,000 payday for chalk, and more chalk. That's oh, that's incredible.
That's got to pay way more than the parlay for sure. That's got
to
be a
absolutely. Let's just call them all even monies. I mean, that'd be what, $2 to $4 to $8 to $16 to $32 to $64 to $128 to $256 to $512. So it'd be like $512 to the.
Yeah, you're getting a six times return.
You would basically get the parlay value, though, if the pool was the pool, because there was going to be, what, five winning tickets, $2,500 in the pool, so you would get about $500 as well takeout. So, you know, you'd actually get worse than the parlay. But you know what? They weren't all even money shots. There was some 2-5s. This one was a 3-5. There was a 1-5 in there. So,
Wait, so are they getting paid $500 or are they getting paid $5,000? That's a big difference, Ed. I made that mistake once on my taxes, and the government put me in jail.
I'm still kind of in awe to see it, but I mean, I'm pretty sure we all know what the rules of the wager were.
I'm just finding out about this.
I think it's going to be $5,000, despite a $2,200 pool, five winning tickets bringing $5,000. We're going to wait here to see these prices, but I'll do the wrap up here at least. So with that, racing fans, that does conclude this episode of First Over the Dozen Hatter. We thank all of you for listening as always, and we hope you have a fantastic post-derby, pre-Preakness weekend of wagering. Got action at Wood by Mohawk, action at the Meadowlands, action at Freehold, action all over the country. And we wish you the best of luck, be it in sports and in horses, with those wagers. We'll talk to you next time here on First Over with Edison Hatter, but we're still here for 60 more seconds to see the prices here on this Scioto race.
You think the Memphis Grizzlies can bounce back in the series without Ja?
I'm just going to consider that a rhetorical question to the audience.
Oh, okay. Don't want to take an actual stand, but you'll for certain say Nickelbag is going to win on Saturday, which I think is a worse stance to take than the Grizzlies being able to make it through without star point guard Ja Morant.
Okay, well, you know, you follow this stuff a lot more than I do, but I would have never, I would have taken the Warriors last night, you forced me to pick. I thought they were going to finish last night. So the 50 cent pick five pays $19, and there it is, the dollar pick eight, $4,250. So I guess, $25,000 guaranteed pool. So I guess they were able to take the takeout out of that and then give the five winning tickets.
So yeah, so then so 4,250 times five, 21,000. So 4,000 is taken out of 25,000.
That's 16% takeout?
Probably 15. Or something like that.
16.
Mm-hmm. Damn, where's that money go?
I hope I'm right. I'm a math major and saying that out loud without much thought. But I'm
you know what I don't get? If it's a 16% takeout on a $25,000 guaranteed pool, why don't they just call it 0% takeout and list the number they're giving away? Because that money's just staying at the track.
Look, we all know what the results of this were for Scioto and for our dear friend Gabe Pruitt, so let's just leave it at that.
Hey, 0% takeout's a great advertising angle for this wonderful bet. That's all I'm saying. $21,000 guaranteed.
I still give credit where credit is due. I think it was a great idea, but wow, that is not the way you want that wager to go on day one.
I'm not sure you want nine favorites to win on your opening day either, but beggars can't be choosers, and I've been begging for a lot my whole life, and
either way, racing fans, you've seen it there again. Free promo here. Come on, you've seen it. That's a phenomenal payout for the sequence you got. Mm-hmm. It's a very good track feed. Free racing programs, 3:15 afternoon post time. So definitely check out some Scioto Downs racing this summer, and we will talk to you here next week
with or without John Morant.